It's Monday. I've had a couple of days to digest. Everton 0, United 2. United 2, Everton 0. Hi, Dan. How are you doing this Monday?
I'm good, actually. I'm all right. I'm 45, which I wasn't the last time we spoke.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Hence the late recording of this pod, dear listeners, as I was in recovery mode after a trip to the discotheque.
How was the discotheque?
We went to see Blondish at Troxy. Troxy itself, I hadn't been for years. I saw the Flaming Lips there years and years ago, and it's still pretty much a hovel.
Yeah.
But it was an Afro House thing, so it was September was playing, followed by Blondish, and that was good. I guess when my wife and I just were friends before we started seeing each other or anything, we met at a City law firm, and we would go. I mean, what actually happened? I'm going to confess to this. This is a confession. So when I was originally married up to someone else when I started working there. So, and I would leave early on Fridays because she wanted to get home for Shabbat. So I sort of get to like in the winter, sort of 3 o'clock on Friday, and I'd be like, bye, bye. Then I loved saying goodbye to everyone because I despised being there. Then when we got divorced and I was friends with my wife, and what then happened was obviously I didn't say I'm less fussy. I went through a brief hiatus of religious observance. I didn't say I'm all right now. I'm good to stay till 5:30 or whatever it was. I'd bugger off at the same time and then return to the city to go to Fabric with my now wife afterwards. So yeah, I guess probably still be doing this when we're very much older than we are now. And we weren't actually the oldest people there.
Really? I've not been clubbing for some time. You get to a point where you're like, it's a bit weird, an old dude hanging around a bunch of 18-year-olds in the club. So
it will. I don't really feel that. I mean, maybe I think that now I'm old. I'm always glad. It's like when you see an old person smoking and you're like, oh, that's good to see. No, I don't smoke, but always feel happy when I see an old person smoking. But it's a little bit, I don't know, like, that people should continue enjoying themselves they can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Until they can't anymore. I was crap at dancing when I was 18, and I'm still crap now.
But, do you know what made me feel old this weekend? Probably older than I've ever felt. Tom Cleverley became manager at Watford. So when I got married in 2011, Anderson and Cleverley had had that run in midfield at United and were doing really well. And they, I thought, God, who they lose to? Was it Everton? It might have been Everton. United lost heavily on the wedding day, so I missed the game. And Paul always blamed me for breaking up the Anderson Cleverley duopoly in midfield because I cursed it.
I had a song about Tom Cleverley that never quite took off. But it went like this. It went, Tom Cleverley is a leisure brand, a leisure brand, a leisure brand. Tom Cleverley is a leisure brand. He is the corporate bitch.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I remember that whole controversy. Do you remember TC23?
Do you remember the song? Yeah, do you remember the John Ketley song? He used to go, John Ketley is a weatherman.
Oh, yeah.
John Ketley is a weatherman, and so is Michael Fish.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
So
Tom Cleverley doesn't quite scan as well, does it?
I mean, it's amazing when you think back to Cleverley, because I always wonder if his career at United kind of got ruined by the 6-1. Because I think what happens, if I remember correctly, is United obviously do lose 6-1. I think that did happen. Pretty sure I remember that one correctly. But then the next week, I think the next game is Everton away. And Fergie obviously knows that following a 6-1 home defeat in the derby, whatever happens, you have to win that game. And Cleverley's not fit, and he plays him anyway. And I think he's not seen again until Wigan,
right?
Away, where he comes back and Scholes doesn't play, and we lose, and the whole world turns to shit.
So I may be misremembering. So 10th of September 2011, we won 5-0 against Bolton. So maybe it's not that one that ruined the Cleverley Anderson partnership. There you go, Hernandez. Got two, and Rooney got a hat trick, and I missed it because.
Oh my gosh, remember though? I mean, yeah.
What days?
Stuff like that when I wasn't 45.
No, you weren't 45, and United were quite good. So there you go. Heading to the title, of course. No, heading to not the title, 2012. Heading to the disaster that was the end of the 2011-12 season.
I was actually in synagogue on Shabbat morning and we were talking about the games our teams had at the weekend. And one of my mates goes, oh, well, that'd be 2-0. And I said, it's not like that anymore. There's no Ronaldo after 10 minutes and Ronaldo after 49 minutes to like make a game into not a game.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen anymore. And this one, although it was 2-0, it didn't feel that routine.
It didn't. Afterwards, Erik ten Hag came out and said, our XG was much bigger than theirs, right? Which I actually, much as I like data and I'm kind of...
Size or girth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Important measure. Well, in this occasion, it's short and stubby, I think, because it was our XG was definitely juiced by two penalties.
It showed.
Yeah.
I'd say that's quite a flattering description of his United.
Short and stubby. Lovely. Yeah, I mean, two penalties, juicy XG. Without that, Everton actually out XG'd United and had 20-something shots again. And it's just a pattern now that this is a United side that is happy to give up a lot of chances. And Erik said they had low-quality chances, which was true. They had a lot of low-quality chances. The thing is, when you have a slightly better team using those tactics, that someone's going to convert one or two. And that's been its problem for a lot of the season.
Yeah, as you said, like it's not even a pattern, it's an illness.
And
I mean, part of you is like, well, it's okay to give away a lot of shots because we've got Andre Onana in goal, who actually was quite good on Sunday.
Yeah,
he's been all right. Has got much better. He's got much better since AFCON. And I guess that's sort of to be expected in a sense because, I mean, I guess I probably looked at the negative side with him, and I still am. And I said that the problem with him was that the ones he keeps letting in are things almost that no goalkeeper should ever let in. He keeps doing it. Whereas actually, maybe, I think at the beginning, we said, well, he's not going to do this every week because no one does.
Yeah.
And that was the initial reaction. Then he kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And so I guess maybe he will be adequate.
Well, he seems to have got a lot
better as well.
He seems to have got a lot tidier. We don't see the scrappiness. And he's actually... There were points in this game and the previous couple where he's been quite aggressive with crosses, punching, catching, a lot of claims. He's not making any mistakes with his feet. Like, he hasn't chucked one in his own net for a while. So if we discount the first 3 months, which was still quite important because it got kicked out of the Champions League to where we may not return for some time, then the pattern looks a lot better, right? He said himself it felt like it took him months to settle. And it was interesting. I think it was Andy Mitten was saying on the Talk of the Devils pod the other week because he did a piece of Carl Anker on Onana that the United coaches thought it'd take him a while to settle as well. So maybe we let him off that and then it looks a lot stronger,
what?
Doesn't it?
Hang on. Let me get this right, yeah? This goalkeeper, what's Onana, 27, 28?
Yeah, he's definitely old.
Until he's 28. Yeah, 27. And then he is only until the 2nd of April.
So he's almost 28, you're saying? He's basically, exactly. You rounded it up.
Played, yeah. He's played in a Champions League final. Not only that, he's excelled at one.
Yep.
So maybe they thought he would take time. I'm sorry, I can't have. He needs time to get used to not letting balls squirm under him.
That's very
shot
true.
From the halfway line. I don't. Maybe the passing. Passing, I'm prepared to accept, takes time, even though he was bought for this. So, because even if you forget everything else, how you meant to do it with a constantly rotating cast of understudy defenders. How are you meant to get that going? And I guess I'm sort of prepared to accept that, but I don't believe they expected the goalkeeping to look like what it looked like. And if you're buying him for all that money, it shouldn't really take that long.
And he didn't have the yips with the kind of things you'd expect in England. I mean, like the cliched stuff, a lot of crosses and high claims and physicality around him and stuff like that. It wasn't that was the problem. It was just
leveled someone in his first game.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. Almost got the ball, ref. So it wasn't that. And that's not really how football in England is played anyway. So he just made a lot of stupid mistakes, which he's not doing anymore. Anyway, I mean, I guess Onana played a part in United's victory. The other big part really was Alejandro Garnacho and his sort of propensity to be very direct and go at players. And he won United a couple of penalties as a result, which made it more comfortable than it could have been, given the sort of defensive performance or the low block defending, quote unquote, that Eric praised after the game.
Well, the thing with Garnacho is because he's so little, he has got that low center of gravity that means he can get away from people in the box really quickly. Yeah. I still watch them and think he should get a goal for that. And we come back to the penalty rule is complete nonsense. Mm-hmm. But he's someone you want on the ball as often as possible. And in the end, I mean, what do you make of this swapping penalty takers in the match? I mean, I feel like, not only get old man about it, but part of me also thinks that Ruud van Nistelrooy should just, or Eric Cantona should just take all of them.
Well, yeah, I think you pick your best penalty taker and you go, right, you're it. And it feels a little bit condescending, isn't it? Because he chucked in the ball, because he needs a goal and the confidence. Does scoring a penalty give you confidence as a striker?
I mean, I remember when they did it for Forlan in the game against Hafer, and Keane was off the pitch. I think he'd been subbed, and he made it very clear that that would not have happened, that he'd been involved. I guess when Bruno did it for Rashford last time, it felt more like a sign of team spirit. He did sort of need a goal then. And I feel like footballers, not all of them, but they're not as into numbers like where cricketers, they all know their numbers. Footballers probably aren't the same. Although I believe Darren Bent can recall every single goal he scored. He scored, and I don't think he's the only one. There's a lot of goals as well. Like, all for crap teams. Darren Bent scored a lot of goals. And so he hasn't scored for 8 years. That goes away. He's without a goal. Like, it just goes away. And that feeling of putting the ball in, because there's still pressure, putting the ball in, celebrating with your mates in front of the fans.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real. It would be the greatest moment of our lives.
For sure. And there's not a chance I'd hit it as cleanly as either Bruno or Rashford did on Saturday. So, yeah.
So even though he scores other goals, has other better moments, probably still quite nice.
How many goals? If you had 100 shots against Andre Onana, 100 penalties, how many do you reckon you'd score?
88? I think that's an interesting question, that, because obviously I've thought about this too, and it feels like we have no idea how difficult it is, or isn't, but is, or mainly is, to take and score a penalty against a professional goalkeeper. If you were doing it like in a half time, or just if you happen in front of no one, you would think, It would be quite difficult. But
I think the goal would feel very small because I remember taking them for my school team, or at least one, and the goal feels very small. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that... Did you score?
I did. I scuffed it in the corner to the goalkeeper's right, my left. Yeah.
I'm also sort of preternaturally built to be trepidatious about not being a fixed penalty taker, because in the 80s, I remember like the mid-80s, you've got Robson missing them, Straka missing them, and Alisson missing them. Mm. And neither of the strikers, Stapleton or Chi, is even taking them.
Yeah.
So, and then they move to Bruce, and Bruce mainly scores, and then they move to Eric, and Eric almost always scores. I once playing in a game on my Sunday team, we got a penalty, and I was playing, obviously, in the Eric position, number 7, collar up, all of that nonsense. And so I take it, and I roll it Eric style, dead slow in the corner. And the half time, the manager like starts giving me a bollocking, like, "Well, fuck, was that penalty?" I was like, "I scored. The keeper went the wrong way." And then so we get another one, and I think, "Oh," which wasn't really my nature this time. "Oh, I better do what he said." And I was not really into that kind of thing. And I got my just desserts when I slammed it over the. So did he? When I slammed it over the bar, trying to do what he wanted. That game was actually later null and void because the players on the other team chased the referee away.
Wow. Can you imagine the headlines? In fact, we should get footage of it. Was it anyone taking footage then? Mid-80s or whenever it was?
90s. This is probably 96, 97. The worst thing about playing for that team by far was when we got a gubbing off the kids in the year below us. And had to then return to the sixth form common room the next day.
The shame of it.
Oh, man. I still feel that now. It was the same day that I go home and United get beat 5-0 by Newcastle. Yeah, not good. What, talking of Onana?
Yeah.
As we have been, what do you make of other Onana, Amadou?
Yeah.
There are links with him that will not go away.
Yeah.
I'd like him to. And what do you think of him?
Well, I like the physicality, as in, and I don't want to get all cliched here, but he gets around the pitch a lot.
You don't want to get all cliche here?
I don't want to get gay or cliche. Yeah, no, I definitely want to. I don't want to say that he's just physical, because there's more to him than that, but he covers a lot of ground. I don't know whether the rest of the technical side of his game is, as I don't know whether he's United level. It's not obvious to me he is, but not that I watch Everton every week, because everything around him is absolute shit, isn't it?
Talking about gay or cliche, this is a random piece of not trivia. Girl in my class, when Chelsea played City quite a few years ago now, I think it was the game where they asked Bellamy about John Terry afterwards, and he goes, "Everyone in football knows what JT's like." Which is just like such a throwaway insult to be found in Joy of Six Insults, if anyone fancies reading it, but where you like, not only are you saying, "I think you're a son of a bitch," you're saying everyone else does.
As well.
Not everyone. And not only that, but you're tossing it off like it's so obvious. So after that game, City stayed in London and they have their Christmas party. And my friend's sister-in-law, who was also in my class at school, was charged with painting Gael Clichy blue because he went as someone from Avatar. But on Ahmed Sifananda, I agree. We could do with someone tall, someone winning headers in both boxes, and someone who can take the ball off the back four and carry it forward. But maybe we're all scarred by Fellaini.
Yeah.
And the idea of signing some lanky twat from Everton is extremely unappealing.
Yeah.
I mean, I like what I liked about Fellaini and I like about Onana is no one could be fucking with him. And in that derby where we get clattered at home, at least Fellaini sticks the elbow or plays Avaleta. And no one does anything. I don't think he'd get away with that with VAR, but with Onana.
How many people did he clock with his elbow, Fellaini? I mean, so many. Sharpest elbows in football. I mean, Amadou, see, I was just looking him up. He's 6'5". I mean, he's a big unit. But
So they're still a little bit smaller than you, obviously.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And his height. Oh, dear. Dad jokes. Yeah, I mean, I just thought he's just a bit untidy, isn't he? And I suppose that's obvious when he's 6'5", and maybe that just kind of the perception of him is more than a reality. But yeah, he wins a lot of tackles. Wins most of his duels and all of that kind of stuff. You do want someone to eat up that space. I don't know whether it's him, though.
I think what it really comes down to in the end is I've never watched him once and thought, yeah, him.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. So.
Although, talking of duels, I watched Gladiators yesterday. You've seen it recently.
I have
there's
not.
There's a new edition. The best aspect of Gladiators.
They've got Clattenburg on, haven't they?
Russ Clatts is the referee. And there's a scene, you can find it, it's on YouTube, or it's on my Twitter as well, where Harvey from So Solid is on it, and he gets to the Eliminator, and he's got a lead of like 10 minutes, and then he gets to the Travelator.
He can't get up it.
Emlyn, what happens next? And every time you think, surely he's going to get it this time, he doesn't. It's glorious. But I think that the player that I want for that position, and it feels like, not A, we need one, and B, we're going to get one, needs to be someone who I think is going to be able to alternate with Maynard. We'll come to in a minute, because I do think there's a bit of an issue with him as well, in that, actually we'll come to it now, because the job he's being asked to do since Casemiro's come back is not the job that he was doing when he first came into the team, where he was the guy taking the ball, and it feels like we're not seeing very much of him anymore.
No, I haven't actually looked at how many passes he made on Saturday, but I'm going to expect it's not very many. 20 out of 24, 80 minutes, yeah.
Right. I mean, it's an eye test one from him. Yeah. It feels like he's not really influencing the game.
No, that's right. And Casemiro's not careful with the ball. He doesn't look after it very well. And he doesn't, obviously, can't cover the ground. He looks quite a bit older than
he's not careful with food either.
Yeah, he looks quite a bit older than 31, I'd say.
Genuine lack of carefulness.
Chubby fucker. Yeah. Like when you call footballers fat, you're talking between 6 and 10% body fat. You fat bastard. Yeah.
And half of his is in his cheeks as well, which I don't think he can do anything about. But whatever it is, it's over a year since he played properly.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. And they'll definitely replace him. I mean, the question would be how you get him off the books, really, without having to pay him off.
But in a sense, maybe it would be okay if we could. I mean, again, like with him and Varane, I wouldn't mind necessarily keeping either of them, but we can't have Casemiro being first choice because it's clearly not working. So the player that it needs to be, I think, is someone who can alternate with Mainoo, but is physically faster and stronger. Because if you want to play a 6 and 2 8s, then the 6 needs to be, and I'm not sure, have we seen any, who makes this work? Declan Rice makes it work for Arsenal.
Yeah.
And it felt, and Thomas Partey sort of did, and it worked. Fernandinho made it work for City, and Rodri. But Rodri now making it work is getting a lot of help. And when we're already quite a small team, if you were to go and get him, the player we're meant to quite like is João Neves, plays for Benfica, and he's quite tough, but he's not exactly big, and he's not that. I don't know how quick he is. So if you were to get someone like him, then the way that you're going to, then I guess Mainoo is going to be your number 6, probably, or just the way that you're going to play, you're then becoming a possession team because that's two technical players. That would be a really big statement. To sign a player like that to play with Mainoo, because then whoever the manager would be at the time, then you're saying there's only one way you can play.
And again, it comes back to this idea that they are going to try and instill a style at the club, and the manager will follow that pattern, and the players that they sign will follow that pattern too. It's funny, I was just looking up the similar data on DataMB for Declan Rice. Who comes up first? Sofyan Amrabat from last season. I was like, no.
So then the thing about it is it the case though also that, so who's picking his style? We don't really know. And what's their expertise? Because I wonder if you are picking that style of small players, could potentially be yesterday's style, because City aren't doing it anymore.
No, City have changed a lot. It was actually really apparent looking at their game against Liverpool. How, I mean, I don't watch them every week. Unfortunately, I've watched them a fair bit, but they play City style up to about 40 yards out from goal. And then it looks very different because Haaland gets involved. And even then, it's not exactly a Pep team of old, because Rodri's so physical and Stones is playing in the middle there too. So, yeah, definitely looks different. I don't know exactly. I look at the team and I say, well, we're open all of the time. And part of that's Bruno Chaos Merchant, but a lot of it is Casemiro can't cover the ground. And so it's like, Is it, and another part of it is the type of tactics that we've employed, right? And Eric, to get through this tough period of players being out, has decided to turn United into a counter-attacking team with almost every game now. And you look at the data against Everton, and United had more possession, but you look at the field tilt, which I hate as a term, because like, what the fuck does that mean, field tilt? But it's where that possession took place, and Everton had that sort of 70-30, right? So they had the ball, 49% of possession. They had the ball in attacking areas much more than United. And that's because United have become a team that tries to compress the game in defensive areas in order to make up for the weaknesses in Casemiro and the centre-backs, because they're all injured and they have to play quite deep. And so it's a real, like, it doesn't give us a guide to how Eric wants to play at all. But we've got to presume that whoever comes in, if it's not Eric, is going to be more of a possession-dominant coach, I think.
So then what I was thinking, because what you say about City is it's not, I think it is, I remember watching like the Madrid game, the European games last season, suddenly you've got Stones and Rodri stood there, and you are kind of thinking, it looks like spatially hard for the opposition to get out.
Yeah.
Because they've got these two Starkers, like these two big lads who are just in the way. But it's a bit of that. And it's also, if you look at the defenders now, they can all, but Diaz not so much, but Akanji, big and can run. Walker, big and can run. Stones, not so good at running, but big. And all of a sudden, it's weird. And I'm sure I've said this before, that like the foremost tactical mind of the generation. And when I say that, it's going to sound like an insult, but I wish it was, but it's true. Has suddenly realized that it's helpful if footballers can be big and run fast. And I wonder if, as the sport develops and progresses, increasingly teams are going to be full of big guys with feet instead of small guys with feet.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's definitely the way the City have evolved. Sure, they're a much more physical team than, say, Barcelona 2011 or something like that. And he's clearly made the decision. I do think Pep's been scarred a little bit by how many times in big games City got caught out, like in transitional moments, and they just don't allow that to happen. I mean, Liverpool managed to get at them yesterday because their press is so aggressive and they put City under pressure. And even City, towards the end of the game on Sunday, weren't able to build out from the back in quite the same way they were doing in the first part of the game. But they don't get caught in those moments when they put five players forward and the opposition suddenly breaks on them. If you think about, I'm trying to think what game it was, like Pep lost, was it Barcelona beat Bayern really heavily and just kept hitting them on the break in Champions League a few years back?
Madrid did Pep's Bayern.
Yeah, Pep's Bayern.
It was just like one of those. It was like that. I mean, I always post this video when United do it to Arsenal, which hasn't happened so often recently, but Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark was a guy who gets on the rope bridge and he starts brandishing his cutlass and going it like this, and Indy just takes out a gun and shoots him.
Yeah.
And it's basically that. But to go back to what you said about Bruno, you said he's an agent of chaos, and he is, but he played as a false nine against them.
Yeah.
And he didn't, and against City, and the same shit still went down.
It's true.
So, and while we're on the topic of him, the way that people talk about him is absurd. He's played out his arse this season, and yet he's still created more chances in the Premier League, I think, than any other player apart from Odegaard. And part of the reason why he's been playing out his arse is because he's surrounded by wankers and a manager who's not having a good day.
No, true. And
if you look at what's wrong with this United team, it's not him. He is still one of the best things about it because he's the guy who's making all the chances for the others largely to spurn. And I can't imagine what it must take to look at this team and be like, yeah, he's the problem, not Lindelof, Maguire, Casemiro, Anthony, Onana, Wan-Bissaka, Dalot.
Yeah, there's ten players are the problem before he is, for sure, yeah.
I would blame every single one of those players specifically for where United are this season before I blame him. Then you might say, well, listen, with great power comes great responsibility. He's the captain of the team. He's one of the best players in the team. He should be playing better. And yeah, I agree he should be playing better. But also, we've watched him play well for a very long time when no one else was playing well. So, and we still see that he's putting the effort in.
Yeah.
So maybe it is just mentally he's fucking had enough, and that is annoying, but understandable in an unacceptable way. Don't know. Maybe he's just running out of form, or maybe the team this season has been so crap and chaotic because of the injuries and, I guess, just the upheaval that's going on everywhere in the club that added to all the years of it take a toll. I don't know, but I don't look at him and be like, if I could just change you for Mount or someone else, then this would become a good football team.
It definitely would not.
If I get the shit that you need around you,
yeah,
then I wonder how brilliant you could be.
Well, look, he still does create a lot of chances, like well over 100 this season for United. He created five key passes against Everton, so a pass that leads to a shot. He does that, and he had fewer passes because he's playing false nine yesterday. He's still United's key creative player. You take him out and United create less. Just a fact. I think mentally it would make a big difference for fans, especially the online fan community, if he scored more goals. And he's only got the four this season. I think just the fact that he doesn't score more goals sticks in the mind as someone who's not producing as much. But creatively, still United's most important player.
Yeah, I mean, he gets the assist for Rashford's penalty as well. Very cunning of him. But I agree that we do want more goals out of him, but it's not like he's missing chances, really.
No, 7.23 expected goals in the Premier League and four goals. So that suggests he should have more. But yeah, it's like what is going on around him is still a massive problem, I think. But it's really going to matter. I think, as we talked last time, what style either Eric or the new coach wants to play. And he is a very specific player. Very specific. And if that is not the style the coach wants, with someone taking a lot of chances and creating a lot of chances and high risk balls, then he may be out. I mean, we saw with Ragnick, didn't we? As I think we mentioned in the last week's call. I mean, the first thing Ragnick did was shift Bruno out to the left. Because
he took him out of the team.
And then when he came back in,
and it only did it once. And Ten Hag, never going to do that. But if I was the new manager and I'm coming in and I've got ideas about how I want to play, then I guess I think even and I say as someone, I love Bruno, but if I'm the new manager coming in, I am starting to think about a post-Bruno team, because even as a supporter, I think might have seen the best of him now. But so I think that would be in some ways understandable, but it won't be this summer, because I wouldn't have thought, because there's so much else that needs doing. But it only makes sense for United to be thinking about a post-Bruno situation. It would just be good if, for the last year or two that we have him, which probably it will be, if they could get some good players around him to get the most out of him. But we mentioned before, like City's athletes, the next manager might think that's a problem. And you can see it, because even now, if you look at the attacking midfield players City have, they've got De Bruyne, who's a physical monster.
Yeah.
And there are players, and increasingly there will be more of them, who can do all of these things. Like, used to be like good feet for a big man and Peter Crouch or whatever. And it isn't like that anymore. Look at Jude Bellingham, say, and he's obviously at the very top, but there are plenty of other big players with good feet. And increasingly, I think we're going to see more of that. On which topic? Look at this segue. Pick that segue out, Edward. What do you think of Braithwaite?
Well, he got absolutely roasted at one point yesterday and fell on his ass. I think it was Garnacho running at him, and I was like, oh dear. But he's obviously very, very comfortable on the ball. And that kind of stands out straight away, doesn't it? How good he is in those positions. So, again, not watching Everton every week. Seems like a good player. It's interesting. There are so many links, and I wonder who it is that's pushing that exactly, whether it's the players' camp looking for a new contract and or
they
move.
Can't have a camp.
Yeah, of course they do. They all have camps.
He's about six.
Hey, they're 6 years old and they've got a manager, they've got an agent, they've got a PR guy, and all of that. So yeah, I don't know. I've got a good sense of him. Yeah, not having seen him enough. I think the other game I saw was Everton versus someone absolutely crap, like Luton or something, a few weeks back.
So he's someone I've seen a bit, and I like him. I don't know if he'd be good enough, but he's someone I've watched and I thought, yeah, possibly you, in a way that I totally haven't with Onana, because I feel that what he can, physically, he's obviously right there. Like, he's big and strong and fast. I mean, really simple things. And even just yesterday, you see the difference recovery pace makes.
Yeah.
When
Van
de Ven gets back, or I think it was at Leon Bates, gets back at Ollie Watkins when Romero makes his customary senseless error, and Van de Ven just, you think Watkins is in, and Van de Ven just gets it. And when he did it, actually, the one who always used to make me laugh about that with recovery pace was Mikel Silvestre, because he was so error prone.
Yeah.
And he's not a thick, he's quite a bright guy, Silvestre, but the way he played football somehow was not. And Oxlade-Chamberlain's another one like that, really intelligent, and yet didn't seem to understand something relatively simple like football. But what I like about Braithwaite is he can do both jobs. He's quick enough to sit off and strong enough and powerful enough to go and win the ball.
Yeah.
And I think that would work quite nicely. I mean, Martinez is more you're going in to get the ball kind of centre-back, but someone who can do both is helpful. He can pass, he can run with it. And I think part of this is probably we've been socialised to think that good, honest, old-fashioned English centre-backs are a reliable and dependable thing. And they'll throw their face in the way of an extra set to stop their team conceding a corner or whatever. But he does have a touch of that kind of defending about him. And I think the thing with him is that we know he can do it in the Premier League, which feels a helpful test with defenders. He can probably do it under pressure as well, because he's not, given how young he is, it's quite rare that you see defenders who are good enough, mature enough to sustain excellence in the Premier League at his age. Something else I think is probably changing as well.
Yeah, talking of defenders, Johnny Evans on the right, Rafa Varane on the left yesterday of the centre-backs. And just like, I'm sure there's some technical reason why the thing that kept Varane out of the team for months is now the thing that's keeping him in the team on the wrong side of the defence. I can't work it out. Anyway, I suppose when we're talking about the number of shots that Everton have, we can caveat it a little bit with Lindelof at left back, Rafa Varane on the left side of the defence, Johnny Evans on the right side of the defence, and Dallo, who's probably been our best defender all season.
That is, I don't know. I thought Evans was good again, though.
Yeah, he has been good. He has been good, but he's ancient. So it's incredible how much he's played for his age and like where we thought his career was at the back end of last season. I'm getting gotten relegated with Leicester and not even been in the team most weeks.
What do you think he'd prefer? I mean, I guess he didn't have the option. Get promoted with Leicester, winning the league, or getting to come back and play a few games.
You know? I'm sure he'd much prefer getting a few games at United than getting quite a few games at United than being in the Championship, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Branthwaite also is Everton, who else is going to want him? Liverpool won't be there. He's not going to Liverpool. Won't be City. And it won't be Arsenal. And there aren't that many other teams in the world that could get a player over United because of what United were able to pay.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, Everton probably won't be. They're going to get another points deduction. I mean, I guess it'll be six again. That'll put them right in the relegation zone. They are at the top of their FFP anyway. They're going to have one more year of their like crazy spending before they started like drawing it down. The Championship FFP is even more strict. If they go down to the, like, so it won't be a massive fee, basically. Everton not in a good negotiating position. So, hey, it may happen. All right, that's Everton. The other big, you got something else?
Just before we go onto the ground, I did want to do one thing, and I know I make this point all the time, but I feel like we're going to be looking for a manager, so I'm going to make it again. Look at the team Liverpool started with yesterday. And look at what happened in that football match.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to sound like all proper football man about this, but it feels like charisma is just as important as tactics, because I know Jurgen Klopp is a good tactician, we'll have good coaches, but that's not what gets your youth team to keep Chelsea off them in a final in extra time. It's not what means that you can take on the best team in the world with half a team and actually come away thinking you should have won.
Yeah.
It's that ability to fill everyone with, and I don't just mean the players either, I mean the fans, with whatever you want to call it, like power, love, responsibility, inspiration, all the good shit. And it's when you have an institution like Liverpool, and Liverpool United are really the only institutions that are like this. They're just, the pressure is so significant, the eyeballs, what the history says they have to do is to try and take that on without having the kind of charisma and confidence that Busby and Fergie and Shankly and Klopp have. I mean, good luck.
Yeah.
Because you're going to need it. You're going to need it anyway.
Yeah.
And then I look at who United could go and get, because I think Ten Hag's getting fired. And I think he knows he's getting fired as well. I mean, how could you? I don't really know the kind of potential candidates well enough like that, like your Ruben Amorims, your Thiago Mottas, your Simone Inzaghis. But if I was choosing between those kind of individuals, and who else are you going to be choosing between? Graham Potter. I would say that, like, if you all think that they're really exceptional tactically, then the thing I'm going for is who do I think has the presence? Like Ten Hag himself said, when you signed Martinez, he basically said, not so many words, he's a short ass and you can't run that fast, but mentality.
Yeah.
And it's just the same side of that coin. It's the opposite side of that coin. If you can't galvanize people to get out there and fucking do shit in whatever way you do, and Guardiola's fine for him because he came from that Barcelona team. He had all the cachet he was ever going to need.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he has like the footballing smarts. He's done it here and here as well. But he's someone whose achievements basically work as his charisma.
Well, look, the other thing with the Liverpool City game was just how significant, how clear it was that Liverpool were going to play the same way they always play, whoever they had in the team. And obviously, the right side of their attack and the right side of their defence were a couple of kids. And Salah was on the bench. And they still play the Liverpool way, and they put City under more pressure than I've seen them, even though City have lost a few games this season, than almost ever this season. And then you think about Ten Hag and what he did. As soon as there was injuries, he was like, I can't. And he said it himself. He was like, when we have this many players out, we can't play the way we want to play. And that's it's a real diss on the players. It's true, but also... he just gave up on all those principles. Now, maybe that was the right decision given the length of the injury list, but Klopp would not have done that. And Klopp has had 8 years in the job, one Premier League title, 8 years in the job to instill that with an asterisk as well. instill that,
get his players in.
Yeah, and get the players he wants in, and also instill that throughout the club. So, like, there is a caveat there. But Postecoglou, massive injury list as well. They play a certain way.
And crap players.
And they still play a certain way. And I do think that's kind of damning of Eric, that he just gave up on. Like, if United bought him for what he achieved at Ajax, he then had a look at the squad and was like, yeah, I can't play that way. So he just gave up on all the stuff they bought him in for. So what is it they bought him in for then? Because it's not the charisma and it's not the playing style. What is it?
And I mean, at Tottenham, I wouldn't say exactly they got away with one yesterday because they won 4-0, but until they scored, they didn't look like they were going to. And I'm nurturing a real antipathy for James Maddison.
I mean, there's a few reasons to really not like him. But
partly,
yeah.
It's because a mate of mine who supports Tottenham told me he thought he was better than Bruno. And it's just like, we've been friends for 25 years and I now can't take anything you say seriously about any topic.
I think it's fair enough.
But to finish below that, it is not good. Their first choice midfield actually has something about the midfield that played yesterday. Suma,
Sarr,
Maddison, and Sarr. And Sarr. Sarr's a good player.
Yeah, he's a good player.
I think
yeah.
He's also cursing himself with the 7-year contract, though.
Yeah.
I think he's got some ludicrous deal now, but yeah, because I felt like we needed Villa to win that game because we need Villa to just go because we're not catching Villa and we need Tottenham to start getting beat.
Tottenham, 6 points on us plus a game in hand. I just, it's not going to happen. We're looking at Thursday nights in the Europa at best now, I think, sadly. And I mean, maybe that frees the players from some of the pressure, given we've got Liverpool Arsenal to come. Twice Liverpool, unfortunately, which might do for Eric and the confidence. All right, let's move on. It was announced this week. I feel like we talk about the stadium stuff every week, but there's some actual developments. It was announced there's a task force called the Old Trafford Regeneration Task Force, on which Lord Coe, Sebastian Coe, former runner, IOC chair and Tory MP, will be chairing this regeneration task force with Andy Burnham, Manchester Everton supporting Manchester mayor, and Gary Neville, failure as a coach and full-time pundit. And he also played for United, I think. Yeah. Oh, and UWS Mag Seller. He's got some credentials. What do you make of this brains trust that
who is Andy Mitten on it?
I don't think he is.
Who's on the toss? Who's the seller? I thought you said there was a UWS seller.
Yeah, Gary Neville. Yeah.
Sorry, I misunderstood. Because I mean, I'd like some fans.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
I mean,
yeah.
I know Muster involved.
Yeah, so, they are. Yeah.
So I think that Sebastian Coe is one of the people I would least like to have to spend any time with.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
In this country.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those, and I know I'm by my dad. My dad always hated him because he was Tory. And so we always wanted Ovett and Cram to win. I mean, Cram a Tory? But I don't know. But Coe, there was just something. I remember like him standing there whistling, I think it was, when he wins the 1500 meters in the LA Olympics. He's everything that you would expect from the Tory MP for Falmouth is present in him. And also the thing that he never really had to answer for was the massive carve up of the Olympics.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Where basically so hard to get tickets for normal people, never mind tickets at a reasonable price. And meanwhile, Thomas Cook is selling these packages.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, yeah.
Because what happens then is Thomas Cook sells the package, and where does the profit go? Thomas Cook.
Yeah.
I mean, the Olympics were fun. That's the thing that always happens with these events is sport is good. So when the sport is good, people forget about all the other bullshit.
He did. I mean, you're right that he carved it up, and there was a lot of outsourcing and privatization of the Olympics, and it was hard to get tickets. Actually, the best way to get tickets was just buy them on the morning because they opened the ticket sales up. And I went to see a bunch of stuff as a result, including Anthony Joshua, who fought in the London Olympics and won. So that was good. But he does get shit done. He's like one of those people, like, he's pretty odious. But you're like, well, he gets stuff done that he says he's going to get stuff done. As long
as... Never won the 800 metres in the Olympics, mate.
Oh, that's true. We're retrospectively hating his Toryness and projecting it onto his sports career. We knew, I think. Never liked him, actually. Yeah. But you get stuff done. And having that kind of political cachet is important as well, because it's clear from what Ratcliffe has said is that they are looking for some kind of money. Now, it's unlikely it's going to fund the stadium itself, but it may fund a regeneration project in the sort of Old Trafford area, of which United have got a lot of space. And if we're to keep up with other clubs going to need it, I mean, Newcastle this week, it looks like they are looking to move out of St. James's Park. There's a lot of space around Leeds Park and so on. And obviously they've got an unlimited amount of money they can spend on an infrastructure project like that. Liverpool have upgraded their stadium. City are planning on increasing the Etihad capacity as well. Everton are moving to a brand new stadium. Tottenham obviously drive more revenue out of their new stadium than anyone in the country. And I don't know whether Chelsea have given up because it's so difficult, but may or may not move at some point in time. And United haven't done anything in 20 years. So it's all important for the development of the club. And I guess getting the politicians involved will help move that along. I did notice, by the way, there were a couple of councillors from Manchester tweeting that United should pay for all the infrastructure improvements around it, so transport and stuff like that. So that looks like that's going to be a bit of a battle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it feels like the direction of travel has almost sort of been decided now.
Yeah. I think it's really clear that the preference is brand new stadium.
Old Trafford,
yeah.
Old Trafford, as we know it, is gone.
Yeah. And look, there's going to be a lot of mixed emotions in that, for sure. It's funny, when I was talking about this with Wayne a couple of weeks ago, given his sort of history of writing nostalgic pieces and books about United, I thought he'd be more nostalgic about it. But he's like, well, you can take what was good out of Old Trafford and move it over, the statues and all of that. And it is true that there's almost nothing left of the old ground. I mean, the Stretford End was redeveloped in the 90s, and then again when the second tier was put on it, the quadrant's brand new, the K-stand, nothing of the old stand really exists, or maybe some of the lower concrete. The south stand's pretty much as it was from the 60s or something, and the north stand was obviously completely rebuilt as well. So, like, what is it? It's the sort of memories and the sense that the history of 100 years of players have played on that pitch in some way. So
that's what it is for me. Like I don't agree then with what Wayne said about the statues, because it's totally not. I think the statue is like Fergie's statue is crap. Like if it had him going like this or like this,
yeah, that'd be
sorry.
Good.
for those of you watching on YouTube, either with those like that two-fisted salute,
yeah,
or pointing at his watch, then we could be talking about something kind of cool. But I don't like the Fergie statue. But I think I agree that the statues you can recreate, but what's special about Old Trafford is the place just seeps history. Sitting there knowing that it's the same place that all this other stuff has happened, I find quite moving.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wouldn't totally be opposed to just doing what it appears is going to happen, because I see that there's upside too. But I think personally, I would go for make the best of what there is. Because I value history more than I value comfort.
Yeah. And I mean, look, from a financial sense, increasing the size of Old Trafford and retrofitting it, I think Ratcliffe said himself it's £1 billion project. And certainly Madrid spent somewhere near that, hundreds of millions of euros on revamping Bernabeu, which is fantastic. Barcelona doing something similar. Revamping Old Trafford would take years and years, like either United move out, or they do it one stand at a time over a massive length of time. So, like, it's not obvious that that is the financially sensible thing to do. And probably they're looking at that and going, well, we spend a couple of billion on a brand new stadium. You can finance that over a very long period of time with a new co, which is what Tottenham have done, at super cheap interest rates. Or you take out a bond to do it. And it makes sort of financial sense to do that. So that's probably what Ratcliffe's thinking. If on there, I don't know whether fans are going to get involved, apart from Must. Obviously, Duncan and co have a reasonably good relationship with the club over the years, despite the conflict. They will have represent some views of the fans, but it does seem like it's a brand new stadium that is going to be there, and that's why they've got the politicians involved to make sure that they have the kind of political cachet. They do have the land, which makes that a lot easier. Yeah, they can stick it just to a bit nearer to Sulphur Quays, basically on the same portion of land they've got. All right, that's Old Trafford. We've got Liverpool at the weekend. I guess we'll do a deeper preview in the midweek pod. But what did you see in that Liverpool City game that gave you confidence that United are going to knock Liverpool out of the FA Cup at the weekend?
I think we can beat Liverpool at home. I guess Salah will be back. That's not helpful.
Yep.
But luckily, we're well furnished at left back. So,
yeah, that won't be any kind of problem at all. Yeah.
Internal solutions, Arsene Wenger used to call that. But what I imagine you'd do in that situation is you'd have Lindelof very, very close to whichever dickhead ends up playing left centre back, because ultimately the threat there is someone coming inside. So it's not good. If Salah goes around the outside and puts a cross in and someone scores, you kind of say, well, okay, someone else's fault. Well, what your centre back's doing. But I mean, that's what you want Salah to do. You don't want, and Salah looking to come inside on Lindelof's right foot, I mean, I'm not going to say might be advantageous, because obviously it doesn't sound advantageous, but he's not the worst type of winger for Lindelof to face, but he's obviously one of the worst kinds from a quality perspective for Lindelof to face.
Yeah.
So the worry is probably the midfield, and I back the front players to score a couple of goals, and I actually feel like the defenders might defend the box okay. The problem is how often you demand they defend the box.
It's going to be a lot
against a good side.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is the problem.
I am not sure how much of the ball United will get, like, because Liverpool are going to turn this over a lot. And United are not careful in possession. And when we played City last weekend, we had this problem again that we just couldn't get out. So I suspect that Eric, being Eric, will have decided already that his team is going to play with, again, quote unquote, a low block. And Liverpool are going to have a lot of shots, more than 20. And they're a much better side than Everton. I don't have a lot of confidence that United are going to go very far here. And I mean, there's routes to beating them. Sure, low block, defend the box well, get out quickly. It would really help if Hoyland is fit.
Where is that guy? I was about to ask you this. Where is he?
I don't know. It's supposed to be a minor problem. So he's got another week to get ready. So hopefully, touch wood, it would help a lot. Otherwise, we're going to see something of a bit of a jumble. And it'll all be predicated,
anyway, in fairness.
Yeah. It's all predicated on getting the ball out to Rashford and Garnacho to move quickly if Hoyland's not fit. And it's just, can we get the ball to them enough that we're not relying on like vapors here, just something, tiny moments, but it's not built into the structure of how we are likely to play that we create a lot of chances.
No, I mean, because Liverpool had, I think, more possession again. They have more possession than City did yesterday.
They did, yeah. First time that's happened to City all season.
I mean, probably didn't happen much last season either.
Yeah, probably happens very rarely. I mean, of course, like, I don't want to be super negative about this, but it'd be really nice if it isn't an absolute tanking.
Oh my gosh, what have we become, Edwards? A qualifying in the Cup against Liverpool. I hope it's not a tanking.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that we ever felt like that in the 80s when Liverpool were on top and United were beating them in cups. And that was a bit, yeah, that was it, wasn't it? United were the cup team. I managed to do them a few times. Now the gap in quality seems so big. And like, you just, where, how did we get to this point where Liverpool managed to have regenerated another Klopp side? We were, what, how many points ahead of them last season? Quite a lot, 12? And there's been this 20-odd point swing, and we've gone backwards and they've gone forwards so quickly in one summer, having just revamped the midfield again.
And the funny thing about it is, the players aren't even that good. Like Endo, Szoboszlai, McAllister. I mean, they're good players, maybe, but they're not players that we would have probably looked at.
Yeah, Szoboszlai is an interesting one, isn't he? I mean, he's sort of, it's not identikit to Bruno, but he's a creative player. He was quite conservative yesterday against City, I thought. Endo, I thought, had a good game, but he's obviously very limited. He's your classic water carrier, but he did a lot of that dirty work, and McAllister does the same thing. And clearly McAllister has been more effective for Liverpool this season than, let's say, Mount has been for United.
That's right. Yes. Yes, he has.
Yeah.
I mean, I McAllister's someone who you thought maybe he's someone we could think about signing, but not someone I wanted us to sign. It's not someone I ever saw play and thought, yeah, definitely you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
For Liverpool, I mean, credit where it's due, they're making it work.
Well, it's what Klopp wants. A lot of runners in midfield and get it into the forward players who run into space. And like Salah's obviously the quality there, but Diaz uses space very well. I mean, I guess United won't give him much because they'll be quite deep and narrow. But when he did get space, he's pretty effective, and especially in tight areas, actually. He moves the ball really quickly. I mean, there's a lot to worry about there, obviously. One interesting thing Eric said in his presser prior to the Everton game, he absolutely chucked the medical team under the bus when he said they told me that Malacia would be back soon. And now he's not going to play again. How could it be that he was going to be back soon enough that they let Reguilón go and he's out for another 6 months? How? What happened? What did they do? What are they doing in the medical department at United? Anyway, it was kind of interesting.
No.
It's an
absolute state of affairs, is this. And no obvious way about how to resolve it.
Well, they brought that new guy in from Arsenal. I guess we can't blame him yet. But probably they're going to revamp it entirely and just swap out the whole department. I mean, there's something clearly going badly wrong there. I mean, I don't blame them all for the injuries because it's a whole bunch of factors like load over a period of time and training and intensity of the games and all of that. But the Malacia thing is really odd. So he won't be there. And we'll have Victor Lindelof at left back, which is awesome.
I mean, yeah, Malacia. You literally just talked about it. I'm just turning that over in my mind. What the fuck is going on, man?
Yeah. Pretty desperate. All right, we'll go into more depth when we know some more stuff later in the week, I think. And we'll have a bit more of a clue on where Højlund is with his recovery. All right, a couple of announcements we're adding to the stable. Dan and I have been chatting about content. We thought we could do some more. So Dan, I, and a special guest to come will be doing Tactics Pod for the backers, which is patreon.com/NQAT pod if you'd like to support the show. So extra bonus content there once a week. And we can do a daily show for YouTube at some point. I'm not sure when we're starting that, but we're going to plan that out soon. Short daily show.
Yeah, Danny Schickbal is going to be our tactics expert. I'm sure plenty of you follow him on Twitter. He'll do some visualizations. And the idea is that on a Monday, the day after a game, Darnish will do some data stuff that we'll make available before the pod. And then before we release the pod, and we'll sit down, three of us, and we'll talk our way through what we think United have done tactically in the game, what the other team did, and then look forward to the next game. And yeah, as Ed said, that one is going to go on Patreon. And we really appreciate the support of those of you who are, but I guess in our minds, we're kind of mindful that actually the thing you guys come to us for is this, and not that. And probably many of you that toss us money do so just because of the other stuff we do. And we, again, massively appreciate that. But in order to keep this thing going so that we can keep doing what we do for you and adding more stuff, if you could support the Tactics Pod on Patreon, then obviously you'll be able to listen to it. So, and I think that should be really good. We're really excited about that.
Awesome stuff. Well, thank you very much for that. You can also catch us on the socials, YouTube.com/NQATpod. Actually gave it the right URL this time. And we'll catch you in midweek. Thank you.
Please.